Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
Not a single senator was paying attention to be like, I think your logic's a little off here. You're the cop.
Right. Yeah. Pete Thamel.
This should not be that complicated, but the NCAA can take 2 + 2 and turn into a 3-year Goodwill Hunting equation. And that's basically what this has become.
And SI's Pat 40.
I think we should start a t-shirt line, by the way, with some of our aphorisms here. And I think I like Pete's line there. If you suck, you suck. Yahoo Sports College Podcast.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod. Mr. Emmert goes to Washington edition. On Wednesday, according to Ralph Russo, our buddy at the AP, less than a month before name, image, and likeness laws go in effect in several states, NCAA President Mark Emmert was back in Washington renewing his plea for help from Congress. This was an extremely boring, and I don't even know what the point of this was, other than this is what they do. Everybody they brought forth to speak, which included Rod Gilmore, Can, the lawyer, Mark Few, Gonzaga coach, yeah, all believe that athletes should have name, image, and likeness rules, which caused Senator Ben Ray Lujan. I'm going to kill all of the names of the senators. I can't pronounce college football coach names. You guys, I don't care about any of you people. So Ben Ray, sorry. He asked, though, quite pertinently, why is this taking so long then?
What
you
a
all
question.
Agree. Yes. Why do everybody agree on, like, imagine how many committees these guys got to sit through.
Ugh.
And there's this side of the argument. There's this side. They all come up. We all agree this should be done. Then why didn't you do it? Because they didn't. Emmert punted and said, blame the presidents. The meeting quickly fell apart. This is the problem. Emmert said that, you know, with these new laws, college sports will not look anything like it resembled before. And I really believe, going back to our last pod, that this is the Gene Cady principle in effect. If you wear the wig for too long, and you spend $600 a week getting the wig properly combed over, and you tell everyone the wig is great, and then at some point you have to admit it was all a lie, and then you rip the wig off, it will not resemble what it used to, because you're supposed to age, you're supposed to develop slowly, you're supposed to transition. But they didn't. They went with the comb over.
The NCAA combing over for more than a century.
So this is where we're at. So now all of a sudden, holy crap. But their real problem is they got to go in front of Congress. So this thing quickly descends. Like, Ted Cruz is asking about transgender athletes, of course. Why? Because he's a politician. He doesn't give a crap about anything except wedge issues. That's not the point of this. Corey
that was
Booker's
peak grandstanding
saying,
by Ted Cruz, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, of course he got a grandstand.
He just strolled in, fed his base, and left.
That's it.
He
don't
did
care.
The impossible. He made you, for at least a couple of minutes, feel sorry for Mark Emmert.
Not the point of the hearing. It doesn't matter. This is what happens when you let politicians into your life. Corey Booker say, well, hold on. We can't just do name, image, and likeness. We got to look at healthcare, long-term healthcare and education opportunities for athletes and enforceable safety standards. Oh, those look like, those seem like easy questions to answer. Good God. Like, that's going to take like a decade. We can't even get this. So here you are. I don't know. July 1's coming. And Congress is, you've confused Congress.
I mean, it took a generation to let him give him food. Right. So, like, yeah. You can only imagine when there's actual money involved, what a tar pit it's going to be.
You know, it's bad when the NCAA's stance on amateurism becomes Gene Cady's come over. But that's exactly what it has. I mean, it's truly, that is an apt analogy. It's like we are completely ridiculous, but we don't know exactly how ridiculous we are. Oh, my God, look how ridiculous we are. We just figured it out. And we are in a corner, and we've got to figure a way out of this now. And so, yeah, that's when you turn to Congress of all places to be your Mr. Fix-It, and they've got 18,000 different ideas about how to fix it. And it's June 9th, and we're like, yeah, July 1st is go time. Like, what? Come on.
Yeah.
Well, of course these guys are all going to grandstand. Healthcare and educational opportunities for athletes. Like, I don't even know where to tackle that one. Well, let's just throw that in the mix. What's your stance on transgender athletes? That's not what we're discussing now. They can make money too.
That's where somebody, yes, they can. That's where somebody needed to tell Ted Cruz he was talking to the Wendy's drive-thru. You know, it's like, you're at the wrong place, dude. Doesn't matter.
This is all they do, right? So this is where you're at. Now you're like, okay, great. Bipartisan ridiculousness. You're not getting this solved by these people. Who in the world sits there and says, you know what I need in this? I need a bunch of grandstanding politicians helping me out here on something we all agree needs to happen.
Yeah.
We're at such a united time in our country where just everyone's rowing the boat in a way PJ Fleck would enjoy. We'll just go to Congress for a nice, simple, clean solution to, you know, a problem that's really been like a century in the making. And it's been the comb over, to use Dan's analogy. They really started the comb over, what, in the 80s, right? When the money started to really get big. And then the coaches' salaries went up. Then the TV deals went to the billions. And they just never thought about siphoning it off a little bit. They couldn't have cream cheese on their bagels, right? So, of course, they're going to go up there and try to keep the status quo, because the status quo has been really good for all the adults involved. It just hasn't been good for the players and the kids. If they just had been like, they didn't even have to give them money. They just have to let them make money off their own name, image, and likeness. Like, this should not be that complicated, but the NCAA can take 2 + 2 and turn it into a 3-year Goodwill Hunting equation. And that's basically what this has become.
And that's the key. They don't have to give them money. They just have to stop.
Restricting them
from other people giving them money.
Right. Yeah.
This is it. Stop restricting the money. We're not asking for your money. And then they go, well, that money could be ours. I need to restrict that because maybe I can get that money. That's all this is about.
Absolutely. Yes. How many athletic directors, Pete, I know, have you talked to in the last year saying, yeah, that's going to be our booster money, that instead of going for signage at the football stadium is now going to go to the players. Well, darn it. Darn the luck, you know?
It's called a more efficient marketing and business development.
Yeah.
It's like, you're right. It's like they used to have, if you wanted to buy, you wanted to sell a car, you had to buy a little ad in the newspaper and hope somebody sorted through it and found, you know, 2006, you know, Honda Accord, good condition, right? And you, all right, I think I'll buy it. Like, you couldn't. Now you can sell it online with pictures and all the different stuff. And it's called an improvement. Right. You can't look back and go, well, I really wish we had that old classified ads in the newspaper. That was efficient.
Yeah, that paragon of efficiency, right?
Right. So it's like, this is how the world works.
The special teams coach doesn't get the Ford Explorer anymore. The kicker does, because he's making the kicks, right? That's really where this is going. And, you know, God bless the special teams coach. He's going to have to buy his own car with his $375,000 a year salary.
Exactly. You know, like all the rest of us that don't have company cars. Yeah. Yeah.
No. Pete, you did a great story on women's lacrosse and how, again, this is not just a football deal. And there's these massive amounts of money to be made by athletes in their each individual sport, because you could be a star in your sport. You can be the big fish in your small pond. Or smaller pond. I don't think women's lacrosse is a particularly small pond anymore.
So, I obviously live in Boston, as our podcast listeners know, and was watching the lacrosse title game. Dan and I are lacrosse people because we're from the Northeast. I went to Syracuse, Dan went to UMass, and I've covered probably 10 lacrosse Final Fours over the years between the Daily Orange and other places where I've worked. And so, watching Syracuse play BC in the title game, and BC has a transcendent athlete named Charlotte North, and Charlotte North is dominating this game. And I had heard a lot about Charlotte North going into this, but she was as like dynamic of an athlete as I've seen on any NCAA stage in the past couple of years. She was Joe Burrow, right? She was just awesome in this title game. She had 6 goals,
She broke the NCAA record for most goals in a season. She later won the Twerton Award for the best women's lacrosse player. And as I'm watching it, my friends have, you know, teenage daughters, and I'm on Instagram, and I look at their Instagram stories are popping up, and they think Charlotte North is Michael Jordan, right? So, you know, obviously it's right down the street. So I go down to BC last week, and I talk to Charlotte North and the BC coaches and the athletic director there. And she should be making six figures this summer, because if you're – look, lacrosse is a wealthy sport. I don't think that's like overgeneralizing or stereotyping. For the most part, it is played in affluent suburbs. It's certainly played in other areas, but I would say primarily it's an affluent suburb sport. So how many moms and dads would want Charlotte North to give their kids private lessons, to get on a Zoom and give them a pep talk about hard work and athleticism? Like, she could be crushing it. And she was a very, very sweet young woman when I spoke to her. She didn't mention anything about money. She just said, I had coaches who inspired me and players who inspired me, and listed all the players, including a couple of her coaches at BC, Sam Apuzzo and Kayla Trainer. And basically, she said, I want to just, you know, help inspire, grow the sport in her native Texas and inspire another generation. So she could be making just buco money. I spoke to her dad. I spoke to the BC athletic director, Pat Kraft, and they know like this opportunity that's sitting right at her fingertips, and they can't exploit it right now. Their hands are tied. And she has 1 year. She announced she's coming back for her final year of eligibility. She has 1 year left. And when you are a women's lacrosse player right now, the NCAA stage is the biggest stage in the sport. There are a couple of professional lacrosse leagues. Their reach and the fandom does not come close to Memorial Day weekend. And so she has a 1 year window when arguably she's going to have her peak value, peak eyeballs. Hopefully the sport evolves and changes and she can go crush it for 10 years. But right now it's a very small window, and this inertia is not allowing her to take advantage of it.
Does Massachusetts have an NIL law on the books?
They do not. Rabid college state Massachusetts does not. But here's the thing, and I talked to her dad and Pat Kraft at BC about this. So could she go to Florida and run a camp?
Yeah, good question, right?
I mean, she's from Texas. Texas and name, image, likeness law is probably likely to happen before Massachusetts because they care more. Could she go home and go to Dallas and Austin and Houston and run three camps? Could she go on Zoom with someone in a different – like, there's – all these different things. And then the question that I posed is NCAA enforcement really going to go after Charlotte North for running a camp? Like, would they go after Brooke Forty if she came back from Stanford after hopefully a triumphant weekend at the Olympic Trials and ran a camp, right? I don't know. God, I hope not. You were talking about an ugly look for an organization. If you're going to go after a non-revenue athlete for
– But you'd also have to get past campus – compliance first, and that can be as sticky a wicket as the NCAA national office.
So. They've gone after UCF kickers in their YouTube channels in the past.
I know. That's a good point, Sully. That's a good point. We need a Kurt Flood of name, image, and likeness. Someone just saying, I dare you to come after me. Like, I dare you, Mark Emmert. I dare you, John Duncan in enforcement. I dare you to come after me while I'm inspiring a generation of young kids.
Charlotte North could be that person. But again, we go to this as I don't know what the solution is going to be. There's another story in the Atlanta Business Journal about a Georgia company that is planning on starting to pay sponsors to Georgia athletes in a number of sports starting on July 1st. They're kind of willing to dare. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, this is money that is not just football money. It's an opportunity for athletes in all different sports. And I would think it would help grow college sports in all different ways. If a bunch of private companies, not just giving clinics and things like that, but let's say she has some kind of clothing deal. Who knows? If all of a sudden posters are up around, I mean, if they do a commercial that's on targeted why would this be a bad thing? Other than, well, we might be able to capture the lacrosse market. I don't know that you don't make more money by having women's lacrosse be a bigger deal than getting this woman's 125 grand she might make next year.
Absolutely. So. No, I mean, you want to talk about a growth market. And as you said, I mean, for the most part, not completely, but for the most part, well, athletes from well-to-do families that spend so their kids can go to camps and have private coaches and do all the travel teams. That's the market that you're looking for. Go get it. It's right there. You know, if they're having a big summer age group tournament in Boston or somewhere else on the Eastern Seaboard, yeah, have her show up and pay her $5,000 to talk to the campers or whatever. You know, I mean, the opportunities are absolutely there.
Maybe more people attend games. You look at these. Yeah. I'm watching the softball on ESPN.
Oh.
I mean, they need a bigger stadium.
Yeah, 13,000, right. I think, that it holds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing needs to go to 30. Yeah. It's jammed every night. You know, sell more. It's awesome. They have done a great job with softball. There are softball fans. Build a bigger, you know, like there's. The more you market these sports, and so it, you know, I think it's too often painted as just a football thing. Pete, were you going to say something?
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting that, so with Charlotte North coming back and BC having won the title, you know, they're going to have one of the more anticipated lacrosse seasons in history next year. Pat Kraft told me that they actually don't charge for tickets. Like they play in BC's football stadium and it's free to attend. But if Charlotte North goes to a clinic and wows a bunch of young girls, they're going to go to games. Like, I mean, that's only going to help. It's going to drive ratings. Like when you are around an athlete of that caliber and you've touched them and listened to them and been in their presence, you're only going to be more interested and more vested. Ratings are going to go up. All those things. These are all things that are going to help each other. If you look at Montana Fouts from Alabama, the softball pitcher, yeah. There's been some unbelievable performances there. Can they exploit that window?
Fantastic name too, Montana Fouts.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
it's great.
From Kentucky girl, nice, a fine Kentucky,
colorful, got a lot of charisma.
So she was named by the Disney Channel.
those schools and states that allow NIL are going to have an enormous advantage in the transfer portal, and it will threaten the NC's ability to provide uniform NIL opportunities as well as fair national competition. Okay, this statement: the only reason that some schools would have an advantage is because Mark Emmert is standing in the way.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to enforce the rule. I can solve your unbalanced thing in one freaking second. Stop enforcing the rule.
Yeah.
Just like men's basketball enforcement. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Great. He acts like there's something in the way, like gravity. He exists in some... There is a law of name. Wait a minute. Georgia's going to have an advantage over Massachusetts schools because we're going to enforce a rule on some. No, you stop enforcing the rule. It's uniform.
What a concept.
What a concept. Not a single senator was paying attention to be like, I think your logic's a little off here. You're the cop.
Right. Yeah. Tell your cops to go find bigger criminals and leave those criminals alone.
Do you remember the old days of Pete? You may remember in Massachusetts. I'm sure they did in others, like the toll boost,
Mass
Pike, when you really had to stop and get a ticket, and it slowed everything down.
My sister worked at one of those one summer. True story.
Ooh. Yeah, did she siphon off a lot of nickels? And no. Like, I mean, there's a lot of money laundering out of that.
No comment.
Wetzel's mind immediately goes to the graft and corruption.
I might have known some people. I might have known some people paying their mortgage in nickels. But there were times when traffic would be bad or the weather, they would just suspend it.
Yeah.
Just go through. Like all of it, it's just easier for traffic.
Fourth of July Thanksgiving, weekend.
Let it right. Rip. It's Thanksgiving Wednesday, free road, right? You don't have to be in the toll booth. You just go right now. We'll get to it later. So this idea that it cannot be, we cannot stop enforcing our rules. Yes, you can. You do it all the time in the other sports.
Yeah.
Call Baton Rouge, baby. And then Mark, but in the NCAA's more likely scenario, Emmert says the NCAA has not taken a position on suing states over state NIL laws. So rather than do the cheap, cost nothing, simple solution that would take 1 second, instead, let's spend gazillion dollars filing doomed to fail lawsuits against multiple states. That's how the NCAA does business. Sue everybody.
Completely.
And pay some law firm a gazillion dollars because we're trying to save a gazillion dollars.
Completely backward logic. And the thing is, you know, at least they want NIL. So they would be suing to stop laws from happening. That would be the outcome that they want. Is to be able for players to be compensated. It's mind-boggling. It is. So yes, that's the immutable law here. Like rocks cannot fly due to gravity, and the NCAA cannot stop enforcing terrible rules. That's exactly where we are.
Snap of a finger, but let's spend millions to lawyers.
So, Dan, is this the basis for your senatorial
campaign? If I was at that damn thing today, yeah, I mean, I would have gone banana. Someone send us a thing. Why weren't you guys invited? This is why.
Senator Wetzel, you have the floor. You can just walk off. I mean, you could have dropped the mic thing. Like Obama.
Come on, Ted Cruz. Come on. Enough with that thing. You could have picked this dude apart in 2 seconds if you just listen to what he says. It's going to be idiotic. Don't worry about the transgender athlete. Yeah. You could have ripped. Say, hey, Mark, why don't you stop enforcing the rule? We have to enforce it. Why is that? Why is that, Mark? You don't have to enforce the rule. Stop enforcing the rule. Just say, until we figure this thing out, Georgia's rule is the rule.
Yeah.
Right? Just pick a state. And we'll work on it, and we'll figure this out. And in a couple years, we'll get a more we're behind. Instead, let's sue everybody and waste money.
And grovel before senators who don't like us and make fun of us to our faces. Yeah.
Right. And now, guess what? You got Cory Booker trying to set up all sorts of things, you know, and it's like, oh, yes, for what we said a couple weeks ago. All of a sudden, Bernie Sanders is in there. Like, yeah. Well, you're the ones who went to him.
Did you guys get the Cory Booker email today?
I'm not like, on his press. Yeah.
Cory Booker's people were busy today being like, here we go. It's like just another, you know, Mark Emmert. What was the line that Ralph Russo used? He called them like a meat shield. They're like, well, we're going to whack at the meat shield today.
Yeah.
And, you know, populist.
Former college football player.
Yeah. He went to Stanford. Smart Stanford guy. Player.
Like, let's get to another favorite topic. College football playoff. The recommendations are coming from the working subcommittee or whatever we're calling the group.
The subcommittee on jargon management.
Yes. The four person group is coming in on this. Pete has reported the 12 team is where we're leaning. I've heard that also. I prefer 8, but 12 might be the compromise that gets the SEC on board because, you know, what do you think? With their auto bid, they would have 2 at-larges, maybe 3 every year. So you could have 3 or 4 SEC teams in a 12-team playoff.
Yep.
So you want the SEC on board? Tell us the gist of what you got, Pete.
As you guys know, having lived through, and Dan, you writing a book about the imperfect process of college football postseason, this is maybe not the most desired result, but it's the best available compromise is probably the best way to put this. So I started making calls on Monday about this. And basically, the SEC faction does not want less at-large bids. So right now, there's 4 at-large bids. You go to 8, you only have 2 or 3 because there's going to be automatic bids. Now, the Pac-12, et cetera, doesn't want a process with no automatic bids. So in other words, if everyone's going to want to get their baseline hope, then they're going to have to grow even more. And that dovetails into the obstacle that Pat brought up in a column on SI.com on Monday afternoon, which is if you're going to grow that much, now all of a sudden you really got to take a long look at the schedule and player safety. So growth will inherently bring obstacles and problems. But the growth to 12 right now looks like the most likely outcome.
Yeah, no, it was great work on that and interesting to see where it's headed and the reasons why, as you mentioned. You know, it's funny. I don't know how many years ago, maybe a decade ago, or I can't remember whether I was at Yahoo or whether before that I was at ESPN, but I wrote a column, 12 is the answer. But silly, naive me, I had the idea that all the conferences would get an automatic bid. And so you'd have 10 of those and then 2 at-large bids, and we'd have something approximating the NCAA tournament, where basketball tournament, where all comers get a chance. No. The Power Five is never going to let all comers get a chance. So this is their solution, their stratagem is, yeah, we expand the playoff, but we expand it for ourselves. We throw them one bone, a milk bone, this big that says, G5, best team, you're in. And the G5 has little choice but to say, hey, thanks, because it's better than nothing what they were getting before. So it's still, you know, we're going from this sack of bones to a bigger sack of bones. We're going to take one out and give it to you little people, and we're keeping the bigger sack of bones. So that's what we're doing here, which, hey, I think 12 would be fun. I'd like the concept of you know, four teams getting byes and the and campus games, and then you play quarters, semis, and finals. The thing, my problem with it, and I wrote in the column, is you are then asking teams to play, they make the championship game to play 16 or 17 games. And
who plays 16 or 17 games?
The NFL! Yeah! Where the players are all millionaires with a union. That's my problem.
The week you take away, and I've written this column for a number of years, is championship weekend.
Yes.
It is a waste of freaking time.
Yep.
They probably will not do that.
Nope.
Well, it's also but big money. And championship weekend, Dan, under this format, actually becomes way more relevant because all the championship games become de facto playoff or play in games into the tournament.
Some of them. So, some of them.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, yes.
But yes.
At least five. And then there'll be a sixth or maybe seventh that have some juice because of the debate and whatever. So that all gets ratcheted up. What really would end up on the cutting room floor would be Southeast Louisiana in week eight or whatever. Like, that's what you would have to cut out because they're not cutting out the big money stuff. Like, money dictates all these decisions. Sorry to cut you off, Dan. Go ahead.
No, it's true. I 100% agree. Pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. And this is what a college, this is how you have yourself standing and groveling to the U.S. Senate. But yeah, it's, you know, it's, is it too many games? Sure. But we're not worried about that.
They sure are.
I mean, the number of games and study for final. I mean, so many disingenuous, made up reasons to not support this through the years. Study for finals was the number one. That was easily the number. I mean, come on. They don't care about that. Now that got blown out of the waters, and they're playing. You know, Rutgers is playing Northwestern in the middle of finals in a regular season game because we got to fill Big Ten Network inventory or FS2. So something.
No, I mean, that's the thing is that they have effectively removed that argument from their own bag of, you know, why they can't expand, because they trampled right through it last year. And one of the you know, I talked to one league official yesterday. I can't keep my days straight, but I think it was yesterday before I wrote the column. Yeah. And like, it's like, so what are the drawbacks? And it's like, well, this, and this. And so finally I brought up, what about playing 17 games? Oh, that too. I mean, it's like, they don't care.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What? Safety? Yeah. Yeah.
Training room?
I think I used that as, didn't I say, I think one of my good analogies was like when you got kids and you, or like an early meeting or early work meeting. If you're having a lousy time out with like a group and you want to get out of there, I got an early meeting in the morning.
Right,
Things are good, right? It's like, I'll deal with it, you know, or got to get the kids home for bed. Got to get home bedtime. Bedtime's shattered if you're having a good time at some barbecue. Nobody can. That's an excuse if you want. It's like enforcing the rules. But let's do this on the 12-team playoff. Here's the good parts that I like, if this is what it's going to be. So it's going to be 4 weeks. It's just like the NFL's. Pretty much. The NFL changed to 14, but it's a 4-week playoff. Top four teams get a bye. Every game matters. We went through this in the old book. Like, this is how you make every game matter. When you can't lose, it's a big deal.
Yes, huge.
Top four is huge. You cannot lose that game at the end of the season, Alabama, and just get in. That's why the other one, on site. But let's go to the four. So now we have, okay, let's take the four team and then home field, which will be tremendous for at least a couple weeks. They should do all three and then just do the final at the Rose Bowl, but they'll take care of their bowl overlords.
I didn't get a sense the Bulls are going to get the boot. I got more of a sense that people are sick of the Bulls, but there's still a lot of details left to be massaged here, but nobody gave me the overriding sense that they're going to go full Wetzel on this thing.
I heard there was excellent attendance at the Fiesta Frolic this year. when they stop attending that, then you get nervous. But excellent attendance. The whiskey reserves were tested out there in Scottsdale. No way the Bulls getting.
Versus sick enough of the Bulls to do something. Definitely two different things.
Bulls are going to get their cut. Can't let Charlotte North make a dollar. Giving a clinic to some kids in Natick, Massachusetts. But hey, old buddy at my bowl game, why don't you host? Anyway.
The John Junker compromise.
Yeah. Home field will be phenomenal. It will be phenomenal. These games are going to be unbelievable. It's no longer like a playoff game. it's a playoff game.
Right.
These will be the biggest games ever played in these stadiums. From drop, win or go home, season over. No little bowl trip, no next week, nothing. Unbelievable environments. All the games that are going to be on campus. It's going to be so exciting that they're going to look at the Bulls and go, why again are we doing this with you? Oh, right, the golf. But when they get over that, eventually the Bulls are going to get booted. This is going to be phenomenal. If you live in a college town, unbelievable. You're going to get another home game, biggest game of the year. I mean, these scenes will be incredible. B, the thing I like about, I like 8. I don't want 12, but whatever. There is a much better chance of your group of 5 upset or your upsets in general when you go to 12. It's a lot easier. Let's say you're Cincinnati and even by the college playoff system last year, that like they tried to kill them. They dropped them all the way to 9, right?
Yeah.
Well, 9 is going to play what in this 8? They play 8?
Yeah.
So, right? 5 plays 12, 6 right. plays yeah. 11, 7.
You who was math. 8?
Yeah. So here's
I got this. Who was 8 last year?
This is how good it would be. If it was last year, that would be number 9 Georgia at number 8 Cincinnati at number
even
8
biggest night
Cincinnati
in that school's existence for athletics.
Yes.
Even better. So there's real chances. If you just put Cincinnati in as 8 and every year send whatever the Cincinnati is to Alabama, they're going to lose
right
19 out of 20 times. But if you get them a chance to host, let alone, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
What and an that, unbelievable game that is. It has nothing to do with whether Georgia or Cincinnati can win the championship.
It's a great
game.
Football game and just a great moment. And all right, so those two did play in a bowl game last year, right? And it was a really good game. Really good game. Went down to the literal last play. Georgia wins on a 50-something yard field goal. But you put that in Nippert Stadium at the side with the G5 team as a home team. Woo! Give me that one, baby. That would just be fantastic.
You just don't roll into Nippert Stadium and win a playoff game. Right?
You don't.
Winning any game is going to be huge for any school. Last year, the Cleveland Browns won a playoff game. They beat Pittsburgh. I've been in Cleveland twice this spring. They're still excited. Winning a playoff game is going to be your Sweet 16 trip, your Elite 8, maybe even your Final Four. For a lot of these schools, we won a playoff game. Huge moment for the program, the alums, the city, recruiting, everything. You create a weekend where tons of unbelievable stuff happens, and then you get to 8. I can't hate a 12. I prefer 8, but man, that's pretty good.
Who would Iowa State have played, Pat?
Iowa State would have played at Florida. That would have been awesome. Oregon would have played at Kyle Field against Texas A&M. That would have been
a good
fun
game.
Cool.
Yeah.
Winner goes to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
How about that? One thought on the Bulls here, Dan. The college athletics won't quit the Bulls. So this is just a general 30,000-foot thought. So they have bowl weeks and all this stuff, and they get their grab bags and their swag and all that stuff. For the Bulls to survive, do they have to become name, image, and likeness like engines? Mm. Hey, Orange Bowl, it's Tua's playing in the Orange Bowl. $10,000 to go to an autograph signing for kids in fill in the blank, like whatever it is. Like if the Bulls have to evolve and adapt and not just be filled with graft and backslapping, isn't that the most logical way for them to evolve and adapt? Is, you know, harness those local resources to pay the kids. And I would think if you're going to keep the Bulls in this system, the Bulls have to offer player stipends. Like basically like, well, we're going to put you on a billboard. We're going to do this. We're going to put you on the ticket. We're going to, whatever it is. Like the Bulls have to give back. The Bulls have just been taking for years. These Bull directors for one night who make $950,000 a year or whatever. Let's siphon some of that money to the players.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, I think that's going to be big. I mean, see, the thing with the Bulls are going to continue because they're on their welfare. They exist because they're underwritten by the conferences. They take their money from the playoff and then they subsidize the smaller Bulls. And everyone votes for it because every AD, every coach, everyone gets a bonus. I mean, it's an incredible thing. You literally create a system where I would lose money doing something for my company, and then that company gives me a bonus for doing it.
Right. Yeah.
That's the Bulls.
From
the
people who brought you tens of millions of dollars getting fired every year to and paying you to not work. It's actually makes a lot of sense.
The entire Bulls system is a welfare system. It's not real. They always go, the Bull business won't survive. The Bull business doesn't survive now. There's nobody in the stands. They have enough people will watch bowl games. Most of them are owned by ESPN because they will watch, more people will watch, including us, the worst bowl game than the best of almost anything else. Like regular season NBA, college basketball for sure, hockey, whatever. And as gambling goes to whatever number of states, even more people are going to watch this thing. So I just think bowls are going to transfer to being like, this is almost like the spring game. Yeah, a lot of seniors are going to bail. Some aren't. You're not going to have your top talent, but you're going to get to see that kid who is going to be your starter get a chance. The gamblers will gamble and watch. There's still enough money. And as long as the Big Ten and the SEC see value in having a 6-6 team get an opportunity to be in a bowl, that they are going to underwrite that, the Bulls will continue on. Now, the Bulls as the semifinal sites just makes no sense at all. But they're there. They're enmeshed. They're ingrained. They're stopped. But I don't think I do think the Bulls should do more. It's like, it's funny because it's like for a long time they gave them those little trinkets, said, look what we're doing. And now everyone's finally smartened up and go, it's insulting. The bowl direct, the guy in the fancy jacket was making $1 million and had the John Junker. He had one point, John Junker's expense account included 4 country club memberships.
You got some pretty sweet earbuds, man.
4.
You know?
Yeah. Right. John Junker's car allowance was $2,250 a month.
Nice gig.
What car are you leasing for $2,250 a month, especially 10 years ago? So he's getting multiple cars. He had the 4 country clubs. He had an average of like $1,300 a day on his Amex. Like, these guys are making all this money. And then, here's your earbuds, son. Thanks for coming. Look how generous we are. Like, you guys, you robbed them. You robbed these kids blind for years. So time to pony up.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it is interesting. Some of the bowls for sure have upgraded the swag because, first of all, it's competition with the other bowls. But secondly, I think there was a little bit of shaming there. It's like, you know, yeah, we made our kids stay on campus an extra 3 weeks and work out so they can go to a bowl game so that they could get a fossil belt buckle or something. Now it's a little bit.
In fairness, the NCAA, of course, put a limit, a cap on it. So actually, maybe these guys would have done more. But of course, the NCAA, well, we don't want them getting too many earbuds or whatever they were getting, like Walkmans or, I mean.
I hope they were getting Walkmans, Dan.
Back in the day.
Doug Flutie might have got a Walkman at the cotton. Well, maybe 4.
How much money they make off of Doug Flutie?
A lot of money.
Still showing that video. Still showing that pass, baby. I think still in commercials. I don't think Doug Flutie gets the money. Doug's done all right, though.
Yeah.
A pass is done all right for him. I don't know if Gerard Phelan has quite made as much for catching it. It's a great catch.
Oh, yeah. Had to get open.
Got open, caught it, falling down, secured the ball, rolled over. Anyway, that's it. But I think this will be wild. I mean, it's going to be it's a different race for the playoff. It's more about seeding. It gets people in. It's about that first weekend. But, man, the playoff month will be just incredible.
What about, okay, so I wrote my column about it. Pete wrote his story and everything. I mean, I heard immediately from the people, this will ruin the regular season. This isn't going to ruin the regular season, is it?
Right now, most teams don't think they have a chance.
Right, exactly.
Wait, your occasional LSU-Alabama game will not matter quite as much, or won't matter as much, because Alabama could still get in, but LSU would have home field and Alabama wouldn't.
Right.
So there's something. So we will lose something.
Yeah, but that it's not going to ruin the regular season. I think Pete just said that. I mean, as it is now, you and I, when all of us are writing as the season goes along, by November 1st, we are shrinking it down. We're saying, okay, these are the only 8 teams that matter. You're no longer saying that. Okay, there's more teams that are at least in the mix for a playoff spot, and just to be in the mix will be exciting. It's when that's why there's Dan's favorite thing, bubble watch in the NCAA tournament, you got 75 teams that are in the mix for a long time. So people are into that. Same thing here. The top 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 teams are going to all be, you know, trying to get there at the end of the season. I think there's going to be a lot of interest for them.
Yeah. Can you qualify for the conference title game, which then gives you the chance to get the automatic bid? I mean, right. Look, if you're 3-8, if you suck, you suck, right? Like,
yeah, right.
I mean, it is what it is, but more teams will be alive later. I mean, think about it this way.
More games matter.
Texas would have been in the mix until Thanksgiving weekend this year, and they were like a mediocre team that fired their coach. They lose to Iowa State by a field goal on Thanksgiving weekend, and then they're eliminated. And that was like a pedestrian, unranked Texas team. So that gives you like a little gauge of the engagement.
I think we should start a t-shirt line, by the way, with some of our aphorisms here. And I think I like Pete's line there. If you suck, you suck. Yahoo Sports College Podcast. I'd wear that shirt.
Phrase to live by. All right. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott, who solved none of these problems during his tenure.
You resisted that easy transition, sure. Dan. So I appreciate that.
Speaking of, exit interview with the New York Times, defended his TV deal. I'm very bullish on the value of college sports rights, especially for the Pac-12, because it owns all of its rights. It never partnered with Fox or ESPN or anybody in creating the Pac-12 network. He does admit that what was once the biggest TV contract in 2012 is no longer looking so good, but they get to re-go in 2024. So, you know, he's saying it wasn't that bad, whatever. He did have this, too, which is Sully got pointed out. He blamed other schools on the way out. USC, Oregon, Stanford, Washington not getting to the playoffs more often or winning has very little to do with the conference office. Our traditional powerhouses have struggled the last few years, and that's hurt the league overall. Tough blow there for Arizona State, UCLA. don't even get it mentioned as a possibility. I actually think he's correct. The biggest thing that's hurt, it's not Larry Scott's job for USC to get their coaching situation sorted out or stop losing kids in LA to Clemson and Alabama. But there isn't much. There's just not that much you can do. But it is shows the fragility of the Pac-12 as a football power. Is everything's kind of got to go right. But when it's going right, you're Pete Carroll's USC, and everyone sits around and goes, "How will they ever not be great?" You know, it's like when Pete Carroll had it rolling, it was like, this is an unstoppable juggernaut. They're getting 15 great players from Southern California, 18, whatever. And they go around and get 6-7 more kids around the country who want to live in Los Angeles and play in a great team. How are they not good? And that's been the number one problem to me is USC football. It's a little bit on when the Big 12 is not doing well. It's often Texas isn't doing well. If Texas and Oklahoma are doing their job, everything's going good, right? Why is the Big Ten presumably doing well? Because Iowa State's taking care of business. So a lot of it does go to that. I didn't think that was too bad. I don't know. Any other thoughts on the Larry Scott exit interview?
This is what got me on this. He did one with the New York Times. He did one with our friend Ralph Russo from the AP. And
two name drops for Ralph.
Yeah, I know. Ralph's having a big day on the pod here.
Yeah, good job, Ralph.
He asked, was the Pac-12's decision to go at it alone in the conference network a mistake? And Larry Scott said, long term, I think it will prove to have been a great decision for the league that will be coming down in 2024. Now, Larry Scott has made $50 million as the commissioner of the Pac-12. And this is just a clear mistake at this point. There's not a single human with a brain cell who thinks in retrospect that was a good idea. But here's Larry Scott going out at the end. He's like blind drunk in Vegas, pushing all his chips on the blackjack table and saying, I'm going to double down on 18. Like, I have a terrible idea. It's been a terrible idea. And I'm going to go out still trying to convince you that it's a great idea. And I was just disappointed in that. That's disingenuous.
100% disingenuous. If it's not disingenuous, then he's an idiot. And I don't think he's an idiot. So it's completely disingenuous. That was a terrible, terrible, terrible decision. They butchered the Pac-12 network situation. They totally blew distribution. they went for years and years and years where it was almost impossible to watch many of their games, which you want to talk about one reason why kids are willing to leave the West Coast or kids are less willing to go from Brian Cushing from New Jersey to USC? Ah, who's going to can my parents watch the games? No, they can't because nobody could see the Pac-12 network for a long time. So the Pac-12 network hurt visibility, and I think it probably played a factor, a little bit of a factor, at least in recruiting. I don't think you can just chalk it up completely to, you know, well, the schools underperformed. The conference office helped them underperform.
And Pat, how much did you struggle with having to watch Stanford swimming on the Pac-12 network personally?
Oh, I don't want to hijack the pod with a just blazing screed on that, but.
I think my problem
with this. How much
is
their failure and how much is your own technological shortfall? Was it at least a combination?
No. In this rare instance, this was not me being a techno idiot. This was the Pac-12 network sucking.
Yeah. The 40s would pay like $1,000 a month for the Pac-12 network, right?
Yeah, I would have paid whatever I needed to pay. I got Sling TV because that was the only way I could see the Pac-12 network on at some points in time. So, yeah, I paid for that. I'm still paying for that, as a matter of fact, for 9 more months until whenever my kid hangs up her suit. So,
well, I thought it was classic Larry Scott to blame everybody, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it's not that bad. It's all everyone else's fault.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is an incident. I know we have a lot of listeners down in Florida, particularly Ocala. I hope none of them were subjected to this incident. Or maybe they wanted to be. As incidents go, this could not be that bad. Photos captured, according to the Daily Mail, photos captured the moment a naked woman destroyed a bar in Florida.
Before not any bar, came in an Outback Steakhouse, Dan.
I'm getting to it. Sully's very excited about the naked woman at the bar.
I'm just feeling bad for the poor guy in the back trying to eat a blooming onion for probably the first time in a year.
Well, take it up with the Daily Mail, because I'm reading them. Photo, okay. Then police came and shot her with a stun gun before taking her into custody. Tina Kindred, 53, was acting out of control, according to reports from the local sheriff's office. I would say so. She's seen standing naked on top of the bar. She's at an Outback Steakhouse location, though she also had an incident at the Mojo Grill the same day. This is a serial naked bottle smasher. She trashes the bar, pulling each bottle down one by one and smashing them on the ground. Then she threw the bottles at the officers. She emerges out of the bar, begins to approach an officer. When she gets too close, the officer deploys a taser, knocking her to the ground. Earlier, she threw at least 3 bottles at officers, and she got in another customer's car and drove it around recklessly. I mean, my goodness, this woman's very lucky they only used a taser on her. So the incident part that I find very interesting, besides that it was an Outback Steakhouse. I mean, you know, what the hell? How do you get that mad at the Outback Steakhouse? Shouldn't you at least enjoy your meal?
She lived up to their old saying, no rules, just right. She was certainly she was on the no rules side of things.
Yeah, she said she targeted the Mojo Grill because she felt the owner was dishonest. And then she was denied service while entering the restaurant while she was naked. And then she did claim to go into Outback with the intention of trashing that too, although she didn't seem to have a motive. The most intriguing part of this to me is they tested her for drugs and alcohol and she came up clean.
That blows my mind. Like,
oh, what? No.
Yeah. That I don't understand. Like, if you're going to just, you know, march around naked in Ocala, Florida, I'm thinking meth. I mean, this is meth city. Come on. But wow.
How about that?
That's surprising. Goodness.
That was like a diversion. Like they sent her to the Outback to get all the cops in Ocala so somebody else could rob a bank. Right. Like, why else would you do that sober? I don't get it.
Only a $5,000 bond. Like, this woman is crazy.
That's it. $5,000. I would want her locked up for a lot longer than that, or, you know, more money than that for sure. Holy moly. And did you see the video? I mean, she was throwing those bottles like choo, 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 choo. I mean, it was some impressive work, I have to say, like in terms of property damage and destruction.
That would be counterintuitive.
Yeah, she was barefoot on the bar.
I thought she had some sandals.
Did she? Maybe so. Yeah, I didn't quite get down that far in watching the video. Sorry.
I am looking very closely at the picture for pod purposes only. It's blurred out. Yeah. I don't know. Kind of crazy.
Dan's going to get a call from HR this afternoon.
It's blurred out. DailyMail.com. That's what do you want? All right. If you get that pissed at Outback, the dishonest manager.
I like Outback. Like, I feel like when you're on the road in like a small town, like Outback's a very safe place to go. It's a good place to get a good meal.
You know what? Ocala, big horse breeding area. There's probably a lot of your mid-level sort of horse breeder types that are hanging out at the Ocala Outback.
What's this woman got against Outback, man?
I like
it. It's not good. All right, last one. We talked about the, you know, we do a lot of animal things, but this is in Rhode Island. A donkey got on the loose in Johnstown, Rhode Island.
Okay.
It was first reported at 8:30. A motorist saw the donkey trotting down the street as cars whizzed by. The issue is really not, no one has reported a missing donkey, which alone is a little whack way.
Is there a hotline for that?
How many people have too many donkeys? You don't know if you lost one. But here's the issue, because Johnstown is turning into like the Bermuda Triangle or something. Uh-oh. Last year, a 1,500-pound steer escaped on its way to a slaughterhouse in Johnston. And 3 years ago, three wild turkeys got loose and intimidated drivers in the town.
It's actually okay.
We need you to get down to Johnstown and get a report. We need a report. What is happening?
Man on the street. Yeah.
Yeah.
A donkey, a steer, and three wild turkeys. Like, what is this?
Sounds like a bad joke. Like, they all walked into a bar, like a priest and a rabbi or something. Yeah.
I think it sounds completely coordinated and premeditated. And we have the beginnings of a plot. There's no doubt about it.
Catch me hanging out in Johnstown. I'll go to the Outback in Ocala before I go to this joint.
Don't go barefoot.
All right, we'll be back next week with more. Appreciate you guys dealing with our only one this week. But look, we had much more like actual content to work with. So win-win. Didn't have to do too many donkey stories. Talk to you then. Have a good week.